Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Sally L. Cordy, and you are listening to Public Advocates. My guest today is Dr. Paul G. King. I have asked him to come on and speak about the flu shot, and we are about to add to the startling schedule of vaccines through the age of five, 49 doses through the age of five, we are about to add the flu shot, which appears to be a multi-dose vaccine itself. So I'm about to interview a gentleman who doctors turn to for his expertise and his research, and to address this issue in particular as it pertains to five-year-olds and under. The six-month to five-year-old group. So I'm thrilled he has sent me a lot of information, all of which I will post in the comment area as you scroll down under the screen for this interview, because everybody should know this. Okay, thank you very much. I'm about to pick up Dr. Paul G. King.
Hi there.
Hello,
Sally.
Dr. King.
Nice to have talked to you today, I guess. Oh, you want to talk about flu vaccines for kiddies?
Well, it's a necessary conversation. We don't have a lot of time. They start to roll out the flu shots for the six-month to five-year-olds between July and December for 2015, July and December of this year. So I'm trying to do as much as possible to alert both the health department and the city council's health committee, as well as the mayor. Now, you were very helpful in regard to compiling information, including from the Cochrane report about the flu vaccine, to Mayor de Blasio when we petitioned him to veto, overturn, rescind the mandates that were voted on by an appointed panel from the health department under Mayor Bloomberg. So thank you for that information. And I very much would like you to speak about the issues that we are confronted with in terms of how it will affect the children.
Well, again, Sally, we don't know exactly how it will affect the children because we don't know exactly what vaccines will be administered. And the effects depend upon which vaccines of all the many choices, which every year seem to get more, people choose or are recommended to them by the doctors or the health establishment. One of the problems that I see is that, again, referring to the Cochrane studies, for the inactivated influenza vaccines, there's no proof they work at all on children under the age of 2 years, and they're very low percentage working for children 2 to 5 years of age. For the live virus vaccine, which is not recommended for children under the age of 2, in the 2 to 5 year age range, they appear to be slightly more effective. However, they come with the reality that the only way you get any protection from influenza is to be infected by them because they're live virus vaccines, and for them to introduce into the child's body to make antibodies, the vaccine viruses have to infect the person. So they have symptoms like runny nose and fevers and everything in some children that mimic influenza in some respects. And also for at least 21 days, those who are inoculated can shed the virus and infect others, which I don't think is a really good idea. In general, you don't want things to spread disease. Now, turning back to the inactivated ones, which don't spread the disease directly, it turns out in the only double-blind studies ever been done to see how does the flu vaccine work compared to non-vaccination, where they use sterile saline as the blinded control in a small group of children where two-thirds of them got a flu shot, and the other third got this control, which is a placebo, they found two unusual things they weren't expecting. First, that when they followed them up, that they didn't see a huge protective effect for the children who were inoculated, from getting influenza. They saw a small protective effect. But to their dismay, they found that the people that were vaccinated had more than three times the risk of getting a non-influenza viral respiratory infection, which would be called the flu, but it just wouldn't be being caused by influenza. So that vaccinating them actually more than tripled their risk that they would get sick. And if that's extrapolatable to these children, which it probably is, this means that you're, by vaccination, you're going to directly make children sick when you give them the live virus vaccine and indirectly make them sick when you give the inactivated vaccine at a much higher rate than you're going to protect them from anything. Making it even worse is the fact that in 2013, again, there was a Dr. Josie who looked at the CDC's own data on what percentage of flu illnesses were influenza, and he got a number averaged over a large period of time of less than 20%. In fact, his actual average number was close to 16%. That means of all the people who a doctor might diagnose as having the flu based on their symptoms, less than 20% actually have influenza, and some percentage of that 20% actually have influenza that's covered by the vaccine, where the vaccine might be able to provide them some protection. Typically, that's because, in general, I haven't seen the numbers for this year's vaccines. Typically, the efficacy, which is the level at which they produce adequate level of antibodies to, quote, sure some degree of protection, is typically no more than about 65%. So that means about one-third of the people who are vaccinated get no protection whatsoever or no effective protection whatsoever, and that's based on antibody titer and not what should be used, which is antibody neutralizing capacity. And titer just says what level of antibodies do you have. A neutralizing capacity is where you take a bunch of virus and you dilute the antibody stuff that you get out of the patient, and you inoculate the in different wells at different dilutions, and you find out how dilute can the stuff be and still kill off all the viruses. That's because not all antibodies are effective in neutralizing, is the word they like to use, viruses. So that. Now, the other problem, which is talked about in some recent literature, and it's talked about for influenza vaccines specifically, which I think is odd, is the fact that vaccines that are being used have something called the problem called original antigenic sin. It prevents the body's immune system to preferentially utilize immunological memory based on previous infection when a slightly different version of that virus comes along. And so it makes a response appropriate to the first infection that it had, or the first challenge in the case of inactivated vaccines, and which may not make it very good for what comes along later. And there were studies in Canada and in Belgium which confirmed this reality indirectly, because they found that if a person, in the Canadian case, if the people had gotten a flu shot in the year before the pandemic flu, the 2009-10 season, they were much higher risk of getting pandemic flu than the people who had not gotten the vaccine. In Belgium, they looked at something called T cells, which are these immune cells, and they looked at CD8 plus T cells, and they found that, and these are the T cells that have to adapt to different viruses to try to get rid of them, and they found that after you gave the vaccine, these cells became locked in and much less flexible to new, different, slightly different viruses. Now, the fact that the influenza vaccine isn't very good is pretty obvious from the fact they tell you you got to get a dose every year, right? And yet they don't change the nature of the components in the vaccine every year. In fact, if you look at the list I sent you, you'll notice that the first one is A, California, 7/2009 Princess H1N1-like virus, which means this strain of, which is the H1N of the pandemic strain of the type A influenza, has been in the vaccine since 2009. In 2009, it was in a separate vaccine, but every year since, it's been in the seasonal flu vaccine. If you look at the one for, which is actually AH3N2, which is A Victoria 361/2011, again, you see this one's been there, was found in 2011 and was in several previous iterations of the vaccine. The ones were 12, 13, 13, 14, and now for 14, 15. The B strain that's going to be there in all the vaccines is B Massachusetts 2, 2012, which again is a virus that was in the 2013, 14, and will be in the 14, 15 vaccine. The other one, which will be because there are now, in addition to having trivalent seasonal vaccines, you have quadrivalent ones, will be the other principal line of the B strains of influenza, and this has been in the vaccines intermittently since 2009. It's the 2008 strain, and when you look at these numbers, B/Brisbane/60/2008, that means, roughly speaking, this is a strain that was found in Brisbane, I guess, Australia, and it's the 60th strain. It was isolated, and it was found in 2008. Same thing for B Massachusetts 2002. It was the second strain, B strain, they found in Massachusetts isolates. And A California is from California, and A Victoria, again, is from Australia. So that's what's going to happen. Now, you asked me about, comment about, well, how many are going to die? Well, that's a question.
That's
nobody.
Right.
I can't answer that question. But I can tell you that there have been deaths recorded as adverse events after some rare children, and this is rare as far as reported cases, were given a flu shot, perfectly healthy before they were given the flu shot, and died shortly thereafter with no apparent other explanation than it was caused by the immune system's reaction to the flu shot they were given. I have not been able to find out for these recent deaths whether that was a live virus vaccine, which I would suspect it might have been, or inactivated. However, when it comes to looking into the vaccine court's awards, it now appears that flu vaccines are getting the highest number of rewards. About 50% of all the cases that are being adjudicated positively for the people who are filing them are influenza vaccine cases where the people either severely injured or died. So that there
yes,
is this
I
risk.
I talked to the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, and I said, who will be responsible for the outcome? And she directed me to the Vaccine Compensation Program. I said, You are mandating this, and again, the people who get the vaccines pay into it. 75 cents for every vaccine goes to the compensation. So I said, so you're expecting us to pay for the injury that is caused by these mandates?
Well, not only do you expect the people as a group to pay for the injury, but for the children, the parents of the children or caregivers of the children who are injured, they're expecting them to bear the real cost. Because there's care costs, but there's the real, cost, the fact that this was your perfectly healthy or reasonably healthy child, and they give them a vaccine, and they suddenly aren't healthy any longer. And this is a real problem because, again, this is going to only add to, I think since 2012, there was a study that was shown that the more vaccines you get at once, the bigger the risk of being hospitalized or dying from being vaccinated. And that's just a rough study. And there was another one which showed that based upon what was recommended doses of vaccines, and this was before flu vaccines were included in the list, that the more the country recommended doses of vaccine, the worse the infant mortality was among that group of countries that were studied, which were the countries that were developed countries where they had a sufficient population to have enough deaths, which they said it had to be at least 5, so that the bias wouldn't be horrendous for whatever the infant mortality number was. Now, both of these studies
I have a question for you, Dr.
Sure.
King, in terms of multi-doses. I know that the VAERS reporting system has between 1% to 10% of reported reactions to vaccines.
That's
closer,
right.
I understand, to 1%. However, the vaccine inserts, they report short-term reactions to vaccines, the ingredients, and short-term reactions. They don't include long-term, and they do not, I don't even know if these studies have been conducted, they do not report on vaccines given in tandem. And, you know, they don't talk about
it. They don't. That's why, like I said, in 2012 there was a study that was done where they looked in VAERS and they looked to see what was the risk of a child being hospitalized or dying based on the number of vaccines they were given at once. And by vaccines, they meant active ingredients because, you know, a combination vaccine that's got three vaccines in it is three, it's not one.
How many
in the database they had, they could only go up to eight at a time because beyond that, there wasn't yet enough data.
The flu shot, you're saying, is three strains and possibly a fourth? Do you know
strains don't count. In the case of their crude studies, how many strains were there, wouldn't count. But what would count was whether it was in a multi-dose vial or not, because if it's in a multi-dose vial, it's going to have thimerosal in it as a preservative. And no matter what they tell you, that thimerosal isn't safe and blah, 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 they're lying to you. The reason they're lying to you is there was a study, it was published by Dr. Goldman, and I commented on it, whatever. I helped provide some of the data for it, where they looked at the difference between the flu season before, the flu season after, and the 2009-10 flu season, where they recommended that pregnant women get two flu shots, one seasonal and one pandemic. And in that particular case, they did get increased uptake on both of the vaccines. And though the percentage of flu shots, because if for the pregnant women, you can only get the inactivated one. You can't get the live one because there's a risk to the fetus if you get the live one. It can infect the fetus and kill it. But anyway, for the ones that got, for the seasonal flu, there was about 50% of the doses were thimerosal preserved doses that were available. And for the pandemic, there was more than 50%, we don't know for sure, but I would guess more closer to 70% of the ones that have been given to pregnant women were probably. And what the study found was that against the background of typically having no more than four or five adverse event reports to VAERS a year of fetal loss, that's stillbirth and or miscarriage, but suddenly they had in the 2009-10 flu season where these two vaccines were being given, they had a jump to more than 100 cases in the first before the end of the year, starting in August. And by the time it was over, there were 178 cases, I believe. And by the time the FDA got through, the FDA and the CDC got through, quotes, reviewing all the whatevers, in spite of the fact they say that once it's in VAERS, it's there, the number had been reduced to 168 somehow. And I haven't been able to spend enough time or interest to find out where did the ones go, but that's neither there nor here. If you're going along at the rate of four or five and you suddenly have 170, roughly, that's a huge increase. And the Eileen Dadman of National Coalition of Organized Women.
Okay.
She put out a press release about it, and she said it was 4,250%, or 42.5 times as many deaths. Well, the only thing that this study by Dr. Goldman could find that would account for all this change, even after you corrected for things like increased reporting, because there was a tendency to get more reports there. It looked like it got about maybe as up as high as someplace between 10 and 15% of the people reported overall. There was increased uptake, and if you accounted for all these things, you're still talking about a 7-plus-fold increase just by giving one versus two flu shots to people. to pregnant women. That's fetal losses. So that means that that something in the two doses got them. And since the majority of the two doses were thimerosal preserved, probably, that are associated with this, then it's quite obvious this is a threshold effect. And it turns out there was a study that was done in rats where they fed pregnant rats different levels of thimerosal in their diets, or ejected them with it, I forget which. But in any case, they did it at different levels. And at the lowest level, they found no effect they could measure. At the next higher level, it was like a 20-some-odd percent fetal losses, because in the rats, they reabsorb them and whatever, so they don't really get rid of them. And in the third highest level, it was like more than half. And in the fourth level, there were no births. In other words, it stopped reproduction altogether. And yet the female rats didn't die or have any serious neurological effects. Well, those studies together tell you that thimerosal is incredibly toxic to developing humans, and that it's a threshold effect, just like they saw in the rats. Now, rats tend to be typically 10 times more resistant to mercury poisoning at all levels than humans are, as a rule of thumb, based on all the tox studies I've seen. So you can't take the levels in the rats and compare them with levels in humans directly, but you can calculate from one to the other and estimate what the effects were. And in 2009, I actually published a paper. I think it's in the list of things that you sent to you. It's one of the ones there talking about how toxic thimerosal really was. And it was talking about how many tons a baby would have to weigh for the dose of mercury provided by one flu shot to be safe to administer to a developing fetus or a developing child, in which case, you know, it's useless to talk about, well, how real is that number, because even if it's off by an order of magnitude one way or the other, there are no fetuses or children that weigh it anywhere near a ton, right? 2,000-pound children, we don't have them. 200-pound children, we don't have. Developing fetuses typically don't weigh more than, I guess, the upper end, something like it's getting close to 12-plus pounds now. But in general, they're 5 to 7 pounds, 5 to 8 pounds. So, you know, smaller the baby, the more toxic this dose would be to them. One of the things Eileen Daneman demanded, and, of course, the government so far has provided no and can't provide any real lucid feedback for a while. Well, they had all this increase in reports to VAERS of fetal losses, but what about the ones that survived? Are they going to follow them up to see what other kinds of bad outcomes they have long-term or neurodevelopments in the shorter term? I don't think so. So
well,
I'm not trying to be fear-mongering, but I would say to anyone, if you have to get your child a flu shot, I could not recommend getting one that has any thimerosal in it whatsoever, because there's no proof that it's safe. All the studies that the government points to are epidemiological studies that the raw data is not available for anybody to check, that they say that there's no evidence of harm, or more specifically, there's no statistically significant evidence of harm. That's not proof of safety. And this brings me back to another fundamental thing which I discussed in another paper that I wrote, which is an essay which talked about, are vaccines safe? It said, you know, it put it very differently. It said, vaccines, the safest of medicines or the biggest lie. Because that's what it is. It's one or the other. It can't be both. But for a vaccine to be safe, supposedly, it's tested preclinically, that's before it's given to any human being, in animals, to prove that that vaccine can't cause mutations, including teratogenic effects, in any person, or cancers, it's non-carcinogenic, and it cannot affect the reproduction of any person. That's directly or indirectly, and that's males and females. And that's before it's supposed to be given to any human being, and yet if you look at all the package inserts for the vaccines, they don't have any such claims, or they state that some or all those studies were never done. You know, we didn't look at mutagenicity. Typically they say we don't look at mutagenicity and carcinogenicity, and they'll say something about reproductive toxicity. We looked at this in rats, but, you know, females and female reproduction in rats, didn't see any huge difference.
Yes, could I ask you, how many doses did you say did the rats receive before they were unable to procreate?
Oh, it's levels. It's the lowest level they got, they didn't see observed any effect. The next level they started to see 20-some-odd percent, and then above 50%, and then the fourth level, these are three different levels of exposure, they had no babies whatsoever.
So what level is giving a child annually the flu shot?
If you're a good parent, you make sure it doesn't have any, so the answer will be zero. If you let Mother Nature take its course, since about 50% of all the doses still appear to be thimerosal preserved or thimerosal containing, then the risk is if they're getting thimerosal preserved ones to the child, he's getting and retaining some part of nominally 25 micrograms of organic mercury from thimerosal every time he gets a flu shot. Except at the earliest ages, in which you'd have to get two flu shots to get that much. But for anything after 3 years of age, you're going to be getting that much from each one. And if you get what they recommend for earlier, some of those are going to be the same amount because they recommend for the first time you get the flu shot, that's a recommendation, that you get one at 6 months and another one at 7 months, or if it's a live virus, it's 6 months and, quote, 6 weeks later. So,
well, as you stated
two doses,
at the beginning
but the two,
of
they
this,
won't have any
they,
thimerosal in it.
As
so
you stated at the
virus.
Beginning... 2 years old and younger, there is no known benefit, or it is beyond that, there is known tragic outcome.
Well, again, there is no, if you're talking about a risk-benefit model, there's no proof of any benefit for children 2 years of age or under because, A, you can't give the live virus one, which might have a small benefit to the children under 2 years of age. It's not recommended. And B, the inactivated one, in all the studies that have been done that are anywhere near unbiased, that no protective effect has ever been, no significant protection has ever been observed. And you understand, even if you get a number, you have to divide that number by at least a factor of five, because only 20% of all flu cases are influenza, and there are lots of strains of influenza circulating every year. So the vaccine can either match very well or not match very well at all what circulating influenza is in a particular location and provide either, provide near zero protection, even if it could provide protection to anybody at any age, if it doesn't match. If it's a really bad match, it doesn't protect against anybody. Now, for the B strains, if you get the quadrivalent, you'll get protection for all the B strains that are known to be, because they're all roughly related to each other. They have two main lineages, which split a long time ago, and knock on wood, they haven't split again. But that doesn't mean tomorrow they won't mutate again to mutate far enough away that they won't be covered. For the A influenza, which you hear more about, because the biggest percentage of cases tend to be one of the A influenzas, that's why they put two different. And the A influences are very complicated genetically as to what they are of surface antigens on their surface. That's why you get H1N1 and H3N2 and all these numbers. These refer to different kinds of antigenicity on the surface. So that and whatever. But if you get down to the fundamental, what I recommend, make sure your child gets a vaccine that doesn't have any thimerosal in it whatsoever. And to do that, you're going to have to make sure it's not from a multi-dose vial. And that means you're going to have to say you want to make sure it's in a, if it's in a syringe, you want to make sure the syringe is one from the manufacturer and not one from some repackager who may have repackaged multi-dose vial vaccine into single-dose syringes, which is done most all these grocery store flu clinics and whatever they have. That's what the vaccines are that they're giving in those. Because that's the cheapest way to give it.
So it's a multi-dose vaccine in a single syringe vial.
Yeah, it can be done that way. You want to make sure that it's in. You want a single dose vaccine in a manufacturer's original single dose, whatever, and demand to see a package insert and proof, some kind of evidence that really is a vaccine that doesn't have any thimerosal in it whatsoever.
Now, thimerosal and the viruses themselves are actually dangerous, but there are other fillers in vaccines as well. And
well, there are all sorts
of other fillers.
Well, again, typically in vaccines, there's not a heck of a lot other than the cells and other garbage detritus that's left around. They don't typically have adjuvants because it turns out the aluminum-based adjuvants would denature them. And when they tried with the pandemic flu vaccine, Pandemrix, whatever, in Europe and Canada, they found out that the oil-based adjuvants tend to cause narcolepsy in children that were, and when I say children, not just young children, children up to the age of young adults, induced narcolepsy and catalepsy in some of the children. And that's an unacceptable side effect at even at very low levels because, you know, you can't do anything if you're afflicted by these. And there are treatments which are very expensive which can help, but there's no curative procedure known, whatever. And they do know what happens when this happens. Apparently, you generate an immune effect where the body's immune system recognizes certain brain cells, of which there are not very many, which are responsible for keeping you awake, and preferentially kills those. So
a known outcome from the flu shot is narcolepsy.
If you talk about the oil, and if you talk about one that has an oil and water adjuvant in it, that's a known outcome for that. The outcomes for the vaccines that are approved in this country that are unhappy, something called Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is, you know, Guillain-Barré can cause anything from mild paralysis to complete irreversible, you know, quadriplegia. And does do that, and there are documented cases of it. So, and in many some instances, people recover, and some they don't. There are some cases of Guillain-Barré ultimately lead to death. So, the immune system or some interaction between the vaccine and the virus causes the immune system to go crazy and attack whatever, and your whole nerve system shuts down. And leaving you whatever part it's affecting adversely not working any longer.
Well,
that's a major one. There are also other
ahead.
Kinds of peripheral neuropathies that can occur, something called Bell's palsy or facial palsy, where you'll have part of the nerves in the face stop working. So maybe one side of your mouth you won't be able to close or eat out of. You have to eat out of the other side. You won't, your talk, it will affect your speech adversely, et cetera. There are a huge range of other kinds of things that may be related to the flu vaccines, but those are the ones that stand out as being incredibly risky and not at all deserved, and not certainly in a model where it says the benefits have to outweigh the risk, because typically, although some do, most children who get the influenza with proper treatment and nutritional support, they recover without any long-term health adverse effects. So there's almost no chance of dying from the flu, because it happens every year, and very few people die from the flu. The government, to make it sound like a lot do, they say died from a flu-like illness, and when you look at where they counted all over every case of influenza, flu, quotes, influenza, flu, and people who died of pneumonia during the flu season. Which is insane. I mean, you know, you die from something. You don't die from multiple things. I mean, they all may have contributed, but the real number of people who die from flu, which is not influenza, but any of the influenza-like symptoms that could cause you to ultimately die every year in this country is as near as, if you just believe the records, which are not absolutely established by proving what the virus was, typically on the order of 600 to 3,000 a year, depending on what year it is. You know, whether it's a bad year or a good year in terms of death, people dying. So that's people of all ages, and most all the deaths occur in people who are my age, over the age of 65, year
right.
in, year out, which is,
so,
you know,
I have
children
to say
don't have a big
a,
risk.
There was a pediatric nurse who was saying that she had seen a child die of the flu, and it was heartbreaking, but nobody ever asked this nurse if that child had been inoculated against the flu.
Worse than that, no one asked the child, how was the child treated? So you mistreated the child so badly you killed them. Because, again, having observed what the medical profession says you ought to do if you got the flu, if you get it the first 2 days, oh, my goodness, we got this wonderful antiviral we'll give you, which turns out to cause hallucinations, may cause you to be suicidal, and, oh, by the way, it doesn't really work. Tamiflu, where recently was found as the biggest scam, like a lot of other things, it's a big scam, it doesn't really work. But the things that really do work that could make the flu a lot better typically aren't done. In the type A influenza, they've done studies where they found if you give supplementation of vitamin D3, they have a lower risk of getting the influenza to begin with. So if you had a proper level of vitamin D3, if the people were concerned about the health of children instead of the health of the money in their own pockets, then the medical or healthcare profession would be interested in making sure that all of the nutrients in the key nutrients in the human body were someplace in the optimum range, rather than, well, they're just, it's above the level which caused you to get scurvy or whatever, and being properly utilized, more than you want to worry about treating with medicines or whatever.
Well, these are excellent points you make, but I have to say, in regard to this pediatric nurse, my friend is a nurse, and she works in an emergency room, and she's the one who told me that 90% of the people who come in with the flu, dramatic fashion, obviously they're in an emergency room, have been inoculated against it.
Well,
that's
not, you have to understand, if you read the study that I talked about where they took these double-blind people and they gave two-thirds of them, and this was a randomized study, so nobody knew who got what. They gave these shots to these children, which was 5 to 15 years of age, or 6 to 15 years of age, which is the age at which the immune system works the best. They found they got no significant decrease in the cases of flu after correcting for the difference in the size of two populations. The effect of the vaccine was to slightly protective. But the ones that were inoculated with the flu vaccine got three times as many non-influenza viral respiratory infections, which are all the flu. There are things that we'd call the flu by anybody that sees them, and some of those non-influenza viral respiratory infections are much more dangerous to the human health than the flu. The influenza.
Well, I am very concerned. We don't have a lot of time left. I'm just going to air my concerns, if I may, so that people look at this as I do, because it's really important. The 49 doses through the age of 5 on the CDC schedule, made me quake in my boots. It made me actually think, you know, we won't have an autism epidemic because all the children will be dead if they take all these, are given all these doses. So I tell people, don't worry about autism. Not an issue anymore. But
it is an issue because it's the tip of the iceberg.
Well, no. I'm making a film called Vaccines Cause Autism. I'm dealing in the present with the mothers with the vaccine-injured children. However, what I'm saying here is this is such an extraordinary amount of poison, which every single ingredient in vaccines that I know of is poisonous. And the two ingredients that I know of that aren't poisonous outside of the body, once injected inside the body, create allergies that can lead to anaphylactic shock, which is death. That would be peanut oil and eggs. Everything else is glaringly poisonous. These are the poisons that people would not suspect being poisonous, but in the bloodstream, they become poisonous and deadly. So I am very concerned with these added back annually, adding this flu shot. How many more doses does this add? I've been told that each flu shot is an H1N1 flu shot, which would be two doses. How many doses annually
will this add? The law reads a dose a year. The recommendation from the CDC currently reads the first time a child is vaccinated to give them two doses, one at whatever the age you're supposed to have it, and the second one 1 month or 6 weeks later, depending on what it is.
So annually,
some children will, but not many of them. But again, the for children under the age of three, that would be two half doses because it's 0.25 ml instead of 0.5 ml, which is the standard dose for everybody else. So that would mitigate somewhat. But again, you can just if you just add the simple things, well, from 0 to 5, that's 0 to 1 is 1 year, 1 to 2 is 2, 3 to 2 to 3 is four, 3, and 3 to 4 is 4, and 4 to 5 is 5. Talk about adding 5 doses to your 40-some-odd dose schedule. So that's not going to make it any better because, again, the general rule of thumb is the more doses you give to a child in a compressed period of time, the less likely, the lower the percentage of children survive to be, quote, normal. This is one of the things, if you look at the last paper I published where we're looking at the something called NHANES, the National Health, whatever. They look at groups of people and they follow them for a while. And this one looked at a group of children, followed them for a while, and they said that during childhood, 50% of them were had at least one chronic disease, and it projected that 27% of them, roughly, were going to have a chronic at least one chronic disease for the rest of their lives. If you keep giving more and more vaccines, this is only going to go up. Also, all vaccines given before the child is 1 year of age are, not only are they apparently very large immune system damagers, but from an immunological point of view, they provide no capacity to provide long-term immunity to the child who's been inoculated with them. So that they actually do damage, but provide no real lasting protection. And that means that, you know, if you look at the early childhood vaccines, the 2, 4, 6, well, the birth, day of birth in the 2, 4, 6 month vaccines, and even the ones that are at, quotes, 12 to 15 months, these vaccines aren't really going to give long-term protection to most children because the child's immune system is not developed enough to properly process the things that are being given in, if they were being given in the right way, and they're not. This is where this original antigenic sin issue comes up. They're given a different mode, and they're different than the viruses, or in the case of bacteria, than what the body would see if it saw the actual bacteria. You know, in tetanus, they only give you a tetanus toxoid. Well, first of all, if you were to get a tetanus infection, there would be no tetanus toxoid in it whatsoever. There would be tetanus toxin, but there'd be all these other things that your body would be responding to, and it would start with your innate immune system and proceed into your circulating or adaptive immune system. If you give a vaccine, you cause the adaptive immune system to adjust itself, pushing the two sides of your immune system, two basic sides of your immune system, out of balance, and raising the risk that you of an autoimmune response. There was a recent article.
Well, we have 1 minute left, Paul. I would like you to summarize, if you could, either what you've just said or to make a recommendation to people who are in the position of making decisions about this for children.
Well, again, if you decide to vaccinate your children, avoid the vaccines that have any amount of thimerosal whatsoever. Also avoid the live virus vaccines because you really don't want to infect your children and risk being infected by them. And try to choose the vaccines that have the longest history of causing the lowest side effects that don't have any thimerosal in them and that are not some new modern technology which, quotes, is so much better, but we have no track record to know what the real longer-term problems from those vaccines will be.
And my recommendation is homeschool and avoid these toxins altogether.
Well,
all right.
Thank you very much. I agree with that one, but
right. Well, I'm just saying. This is really what the deal is. Not everyone can homeschool, and all I can say is, if you can't afford to, wait till your child becomes vaccine injured. You want to know what real expenses are? Those are real expenses, and only you are liable for them.
in the short run, that is 100% true. And not only that, the healthcare profession will turn their back on you as if you were somehow guilty of something.